Let's officially put a bow on the weekend. Monday, back to work. The Real Kipper and Bourne Show. Nick Kyprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee, Derek Brandeo, and Jake the Snake Schultz with you for the next 2 hours, including all Leaf Hour edition of our show. Toronto Maple Leafs drop both halves to a back-to-back. They snuck out a point.
Woo!
Sunday on a game that we did on Sportsnet. But overall, not a great feeling on maybe where they were this weekend, where they're at in general. Let's start with you, JB, your overall assessment of the weekend.
First off, Kip, we never did note that our record of doing regional games for Sportsnet and them losing in horrific fashion continued.
Is it us?
It might be us.
Should they?
You guys gotta start working for Prime.
Yeah. Prime is the magic touch.
If we got to take one for the team. And put,
if it means a Leafs cup, and can
put,
me.
Put Sammy and Gordo on the show.
What would you say?
I'll
you
do it.
Here.
But I'll put a bow on the weekend by saying I thought in the second half of the back-to-back in particular, they looked slow and tired. And I know it's early in the season. We don't want to hear those sort of things. But slow feels like a bit of a conclusion for me, where this team is just having trouble creating offense, Kip. I mean, there's a number of games this season where they just can't seem to produce enough goals. And we go back to last year's playoffs, and it more and more is like, well, the core guys score, so let's surround them with non-scorers. And it's like, can someone, Robertson or McMahon or someone break out from the depth outside of Matthew Nyes has been a nice plus. That's about it.
Slow and tired is what you got out of it, Sammy?
Yeah, I think that's pretty well said. I am a little bit concerned about the play of Austin Matthews to this point of the season. And I think that's a big storyline. Like, listen, when he's going, Marner's going, Nylander's going, Tavares is, he goes sometimes he doesn't. They're a hard team to beat in general. But when one of the four or two of the four aren't really lighting it up, you really start to see flaws with this team. And Matthews hasn't been his usual self in terms of shooting the puck in the net. I think I've seen that he's got, his shooting percentage isn't great to start this year, missing the net a lot more than he has been. I don't know if it's the captaincy or whatever, but that stuck out to me. You know, that's the type of game where he makes great pass to Nylander on the power play goal. But that's one where he shoots one in the net, and it's a 2-1 game, or you go to overtime, he gets one in overtime. He's just lacking that sting for me.
So it was last year where he had the back-to-back hat tricks.
To start the year.
And then he went through a stretch where I think he had one goal in 8 games or 9 games. Yeah, something like that. And he's been known to have long streaks of not putting the puck in the net, but there's no worry here right now, is there?
No, not for me. I mean, the funny thing is you look at other players on other teams that score goals, and oh, that guy gets 40 goals or whatever, and you don't watch him every game. You don't realize 40 goals doesn't come a goal every second game. You know, it comes in a hat trick and five. That's just kind of the nature of scoring goals in the NHL. I would say one of the main things for me, Kip, is he's being used differently. You know, he has taken the most defensive zone draws. Him and Marner have started in the D zone more this year than Tavares and Kampf, and that was not the case under Keefe, where Tavares and Kampf started more D zone draws. So they're starting more in their own end. They're spending more time in the D zone than the O zone as a result. It's not going in, but he's still getting lots of shots. I'm not that worried about it. You got any fears that it's a greater issue? You already hear people going, is he hurt?
I've seen the hurt thing.
Yeah, but everyone says that anytime someone's cold for a bit, it's like, hurt? It's like, I don't think so. Looks fine to me.
I'm not overly worried based on the fact that we've seen long stretches where he's kind of got cold. You know how I believe, or my beliefs on where he needs to end up when this thing's all said and done. Does he need to look like a 60 or 70 goal scorer? If he doesn't get 50, is it a disappointment? No, because we're way beyond that. We're now at the point of what does it look like?
Are you well-rounded?
Towards building something towards the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So he'll always be a threat. There's no question that he'll always be the guy that they worry about most shooting the puck.
Yeah.
We've seen Mitch Marner handling the puck probably more in the last 10 days than we saw all of the first 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks of the season. So he seems to be looking a lot more like himself, albeit he'd like to have more than 2 goals for the season.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just a matter of now Austin finding those seams. Like, even the goals that we're accustomed to seeing where he can score from 40 feet out, when he toe drags it in, changes the angle, and catches the goalie a little sleep off the post, doesn't seem like those opportunities are there like they
were. I do wonder with those ones if that's just not – that never felt like a sustainable way to score to me anyway. You know, like everyone's kind of figured, all right, he pulls it into his feet, a foot, and he shoots it beside the shin pad and like the goal. I don't know. Like that.
So
those should have been stopped sometimes, and now they're maybe on to him a bit with them.
I saw a tweet this morning. This comes from Corsi HL on Twitter. Matthews 5-on-5 shooting percentage, 24-25, is 5.88%. Matthews 5.5 shooting percentage from last season was 14.9.
Yeah.
The power play this year, 6.25. And last year it was 20.48. Yeah. So there's a huge thing there. And this one stuck out to me. He missed the net on 23.2% of his unblocked shots this year. And last year he missed the net only 17.6% of the time.
That's
on his shots.
One. That's a big one.
And to me, he is missing the net a lot.
But I will say, a lot of times I don't love when people talk about shooting percentage, because often there's a reason the shots aren't going in. Like, you're not getting to the areas as well.
Yeah.
You know, you get to the dangerous areas, yeah, your shooting percentage goes up. I'm not sure he's getting to the areas quite as well. You know, I shared that stat with you guys this morning. First place in the NHL in high danger scoring chances this year is Matthew Nyes, not Austin Matthews, who typically leads those sort of categories. So, you know, I'm not as sure that he's... Yeah, your shooting percentage is going to be down if you're not getting to the dangerous areas as much.
We've seen a lot of attempts at bad angles for me, you, Sammy, and most of the NHL. But for him, there's always the thought that he's going to find a way to get a bounce and put it in. He has scored on occasion from bad angles.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
It's like him and Draisaitl, they whip it on net low from the...
You think that one against Buffalo last year where he rips it off the sideboards? It's in before Levi knows it even what happened.
Yeah.
But you... Sometimes the stars have to align for that sort of stuff, right? Yeah. You got to get some puck luck. You got to get.
That's when you're so confident that you're not hesitating. It's just like it's just happening. And we talked about it last night in the power play. When he gets the puck right now, everything's dusted off, right? It's a couple stick handles and a look. I guess he's a lefty. He's always a couple of touches.
It's funny to me to watch a line that has Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner on it, and you know Matthew Nyes. I think over the past 2 weeks, I would say that Matthews has been the third best guy on that line, which is crazy to say. Like, it's just how good Nyes has been, especially on the forecheck. Like, he's the most coachable guy ever because Berube
good puck touches.
Yeah, Berube told him to go north and south.
Know, but you're feeding,
and all he does is go.
You're feeding right into his wheelhouse because he's a fantastic skater.
Yes.
He's got about 230 pounds to go and drive a forecheck. He's got quick feet for a man that heavy. Like, it constantly plays into where he can.
But he just doesn't. Like, Matthews just has the puck so much less because of how well Marner and Nyes are playing.
Is Nyes being noticed that much more at the expense of Austin Matthews' game?
It's interesting. I just opened up SportLogic to look at some stats, and like first place in the NHL in expected goals based on shots and stuff is Austin Matthews.
Yeah.
You know, he's ahead of Kirill Kaprizov, Nikita Kucherov. Like, he's still pretty damn good. Yeah. But yeah, I get the idea that it has changed with Nyes' resurgence or emergence. He is becoming a top end guy. You know, maybe this isn't the time to talk about it, but I wonder if Team USA is interested in Nyes. He is a different player than he was last year. You look at his ice time per game for the Leafs, 14 minutes, 15 minutes, 16 minutes. Last time that night, he's 19 and a half. He's catching up to Nylander. He's ahead of Tavares. Like, this guy is becoming a star for this team.
They have a lot.
Right. What's that?
They got a lot of good players.
Yeah, you know, that's true. They're so loaded. Maybe that's a...
And Boldy's a guy with Guerin leading the charge. Boldy's. Would probably take more of a place on as a role than Nyes for me right now.
For sure.
So, I mean, like, I'm not overly concerned about Matthews, but I think his lack of production, you can kind of point to their uneven start in terms of, like, he's won them so many games where he just scores two or three, has 3 points, has 4 points. Like, it's just...
They're 6-5-2. If he's got a few more goals than the power plays average, they're, you know, 8-3-2.
So a lot of it comes down to that for me, but, I mean, they're getting nothing from the bottom six. Like, you know, you get the late one from Lorenz where he scores against the Blues.
Yeah, that was...
Good goal. Great. But it's his second of the year. Yeah. You know, Camp's giving them nothing offensively, obviously. Domi barely doing anything. It's just, it's very tough.
Yeah.
Outside of being snake bitten, we saw a pretty good response from Austin Matthews, albeit down 3-1, 200 feet from your own net. You don't typically want a player to take a penalty at that point of the game, but it wasn't just anybody. It was Austin Matthews coming to the aid of Mitch Marner. Let's get Craig Berube's thoughts on that Saturday night.
I have no problem with Matthews doing what he did. I mean, Mitch Marner got drilled at the side of the net. Should have been a penalty. They missed it. So, not, you know, for sure that's a penalty, and they missed it. And, you know, he's sticking up for his teammate there. I have no problem with that.
I think that's nice to set the precedent that I'm going to be okay with those penalties. You guys want to stand up for each other, green light from the coach. I like that.
I mean, just not to do ref corner here.
Do it.
What are you looking at?
Hey, like, Stripes, what are you watching?
But, like, are you the one of the premier players is standing in front of the net where the puck is, gets frozen, and he gets absolutely buried. It's just nothing?
Yeah.
And then you give Matthews one for the retaliation? That's just world-class bad refereeing.
Yeah.
That drives you nuts. No. Drives you nuts if you're a coach.
Yeah. They did kill it off.
Yeah.
And that's one of those where short-term pain for long-term gains. That's kind of the response that you can hope Austin is feeling now moving forward with his new captaincy, that's something that shouldn't be any hesitation. There shouldn't be any second guessing. Mm-hmm. Somebody's got to go into that pile and say, that's just not good enough.
But, you know, there have been now a few games where in our group chat or even just in person when we've been there, like last night, it's like now would be a good time for Matthews to have like a shift. And he doesn't seem to have an extra step or a gear or whatever it may be. But, you know, we talked about Nyes and gave him lots of praise here on the show already. Going in on the forecheck in the second and third period of that game against Minnesota, there's a couple times he's going in and kind of pushing the guy. Hey, like
you try doing it like 40 times
in easy.
24 hours. I know.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just saying that it's a natural progression that you can't play that hard that often every shift and give Craig Berube exactly what he wants. So I'm not surprised if the foot's off the gas pedal a bit. Think about the way these guys have played since they broke into the league and what Craig's asking for. It's night and day. Mm-hmm. And pace of play with back-to-backs. And now, how many of those grade A forecheck games are you going to have over the course of 82 games?
Well, that's right? It. So does that mean Berube should change it a bit in the regular season?
I don't know, or get in better shape. Like, I don't think he's going to take his foot off the gas pedal. And that's where you hope that you got 20 guys. So if Nyes isn't on top of his forecheck game, then McMahon's going to pick up the pace. Holmberg's going to pick up the pace. Other guys you're going to lean on over the course of the season. But if they all kind of shut down at the same time, then you're going to have nights like last night where it really looks like your foot is off the gas pedal.
It's funny. Last year, they averaged 26.7 hits per game, and they averaged actually fewer than that this season with Berube. But it does seem like there's more of an effort for guys to go in and do that. So I don't know how that checks out necessarily. It does seem tiring, though, to play that way. So whatever it may be, it was visible to me at the end of that game. So
just
back-to-back on the road.
Just to finish off on Matthews' thing, and it's, you know, something we talked about a little bit on Leafs Talk last night. Doug mentioned it on Friday in our Off the Rails segment where the 200-pound C off Tavares' chest onto Matthews. Like, is that something here?
You know, what are, like Mitch Marner's got 14 points and Matthews is, you know, kind of right there with him. He's got two goals. Like, we don't think Marner's suffering from anything, or William Nylander's got less points than last year. I think it's like a, we're looking for a reason, and I just,
it's just the results. I guess the results have always fallen with him, but you know, when you're not the captain, I guess it's a little bit different. But when it's a shaky start with you wearing the C, maybe it feels a little bit different. I don't know. I'm looking for reasons.
Yeah.
That's it.
No,
it's a fair question. It's a fair point that he may be feeling a little differently this season. And I hope that we keep seeing these subtle changes in his leadership to build off of what we saw Saturday night, coming to the aid of Marner, but there's no doubt after, what, eight seasons now, that his first thought is, if I'm going to lead this team, I got to lead putting the puck in the net. Mm-hmm. That's the most natural feel that he has.
Yeah.
After that, he's going to have to come out of, you know, the mindset that as long as I'm scoring, I'm good. And it's like, no, not anymore. Now it's plus as the captain of the Leafs. Maybe he's got a few different things he's thinking about besides putting the puck in the net. And
yeah, it could be all a combination, right? New coach, more D-zone starts, wearing the C. It's all just weighing a little bit differently on how he was feeling.
I will say that I thought that line was awesome defensively last night.
Yeah.
They
had some heavy shifts in the first year. They had the puck.
That Erickson Ek is a really good defensive center, and I think he probably played 85 to 90% of the minutes against Matthews. I thought it was a tight game, and, you know, they didn't get the extra point, but just interesting question on Matthews' captaincy.
Anthony Stolarz was the reason they got a point last night.
Yeah.
You know, that third period, the Leafs had nothing left in the tank, and he was battling.
The coach mentioned something to that effect. Right. It's a short, sweet one, like many of them were over the past weekend, but Berube clips 7 on Stolarz.
We were a little gas in the third, you know, killed a lot of penalties, and we were gas, but he stood tall for us, you know. Yeah, it was good. That's a good point. Good point.
Would we say he dropped his stick 6 times last night?
4 for sure.
I mean, I don't know what kept happening.
It's giving me bad Samsonov flashbacks, boys.
Oh, the stick.
That's where the comparison ends, mind you. But boy, he dropped his stick a lot, and that reminded me of Samsonov used to do it every game.
Yeah.
We'll pick up on Stolarz. Let's just get an overall thought from Craig Berube on last night's game versus the Minnesota Wild.
Well, we just, you know, for me, it's the mindset. We didn't play the way we played in the first, you know, direct, hard on things, pucks. I thought that we were light in the second period, and, you know, we tried to make a couple plays late in a shift, and it turns over, and that's the result of the first goal they got. And then now these guys are going back in our own zone, tired. You know, it's things like that, managing the game. But for me, it's, you know, playing the way we played in the first period. We didn't do that in the second.
Okay, that was the Blues, actually.
That was the game against the Blues, yeah.
But it could almost work.
You know, the one point he did make there about how they tried to make a play late in a shift, and it's about staying on the gas, doing the consistent little things, getting it deep, and they didn't do it against the Blues. Why don't we take it to Berube clip 3 and his overview of the Wild game now.
Real good battle. Special teams were good tonight. Power play got us a goal, and, you know, we killed penalties well tonight.
Okay.
Short and sweet.
Yeah.
Short and sweet. So let's just stay on Stolarz for a second, because I think it was our post-game comment last night on Sportsnet where we had a discussion on, I think we expect Stolarz to play Boston, and I'm like, and Friday for me, and possibly Wall maybe on Saturday.
Yeah.
But for me, it's crystal clear after the weekend that, like, Stolarz is just head and shoulders above Joseph Wall, and that you are now not exactly lighting it up in the Atlantic. And if you want to start distancing yourself from the middle of the pack in the Eastern Conference, start leaning on Stolarz a lot more.
Yeah, I didn't agree last night. I don't agree now. I feel like Wall deserves a chance to get his feet under him. Because I think if you don't let him get his feet under him, you're relying on Stolarz, and that now you got no backup plan. I think
we
you
do
gotta
not agree.
Secure the backup plan
he,
here a little
he
bit.
He can remain the backup plan.
Well, sure, it's a backup plan, but, like, let him get playing well, playing, being a part of the team. No Team B. It was meant to be Team A and Team B. Be starter.
Based on this, then you've got Joseph Wall starting tomorrow night against the Boston Bruins.
That's fine. The Bruins aren't any better than the Blues or the Wild or any other team.
I think they're nuts if they start Joseph Wall against the Bruins tomorrow night.
I mean, this is what we criticized Sheldon Keefe for, was that it was always everything he could to get the 2 points that night rather than zooming out and being like, what's the best thing for this team this year?
But I think the 2 points are really important against the
division. I know you're too desperate, too early. Right? You're too desperate.
I mean,
Sammy.
I'm
division rival.
Totally team Stolarz. Like I,
he's the better goalie. I obviously prefer him right now too.
I think right now, like Kipper said, you're kind of off to an uneven start, and every game that he's gone in there, I guess outside the Rangers game, where he was still pretty good, but you know he gets out goaltended by the best goalie in the world. He's given you a chance to win and has been excellent. Like he's been one of the main reasons you've won a lot of these games. To me, you press. I don't know how long this is going to last with Stolarz. Like I'm loving it. I'm so invested in the guy. I just love watching him play net. I think you just ride the hot hand here. And to me, it's Stolarz Tuesday, Stolarz Friday, Wall Saturday, second half of back-to-back. That's what I'm doing.
Stolarz has just made the save that he needs to make.
Yeah.
And Saturday night, Wall didn't.
I agree.
And I don't know what he ended up with.
Bad luck.
3 on 14 shots. I don't care how well he played. You can't give up 3 goals on 14 shots. He needed
to be 24 shots.
The first 3 goals.
Oh, I see.
Right? It's not the total shots. I think he gave up 14, 16. Whatever it is, it's not a great number. Put him behind the 8 ball. They didn't dig themselves out. He needed to make a save off of Parayko. He needed
one save. The second one?
The second one. Just needs to make that save. That's a Stolarz save.
Yeah.
Right from training camp on out.
But no one listening to the three of us right now is hearing me say Stolarz is bad or not good enough or wouldn't make saves. It's to me, it's like Wohl was in game 6 of the Stanley Cup playoffs for the Leafs last year and was amazing, about to shut out the Bruins. And all of a sudden the momentum was like, this guy is the guy saving their season in game 5 and game 6. Mm. And he's the dude. He's hurt in the camp.
And then he lost his net. He's lost his net.
He lost his net because someone else played well, not because he played poorly. He deserves the chance to recover.
When do you ever lose your net other than that?
When you play badly. That's the other time you do. And he hasn't lost it because he's played badly, and we're in game 12.
But you,
give him a chance to find it again.
You've won the net so far, and I need a big win against a rival Tuesday night.
Yeah.
They do need to win.
So let's just agree to disagree.
Agreed.
Thanks, Kev.
But if you want to go... Like, Stolarz is absolutely no-brainer starting Tuesday for me. If you want to talk about Friday, if Friday's Wall, that's fine. Then you switch it to Stolarz in the second half of the back-to-back, that's fine. But there is no world that if I'm the coach or the general manager or anyone making a decision that Anthony Stolarz isn't starting Tuesday night. It's a huge game. He's earned it. He's been way better. He's been there. He's been available. Done. End of story.
All right.
End of story.
Good.
We're good.
I've said my piece.
But I disagree with it.
We've agreed to disagree.
2 against 1. We win.
We do not agree.
I don't know if that's how it works.
Do you think if the Leafs made decisions on their lineup based on the three of us finding a majority opinion, do you think they would have more success than they've had?
Boy, I don't know. That's a great question. Probably not.
How about you?
100%.
That's a good drop.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
Power play.
50%. Right, last night 50%. How do you feel other than great about Leaf power play right now?
I thought it looked a lot better. You know, it's I think I've told you a couple times. I mentioned last night I was a forward who played the point on the power play in college. It's very hard to make that transition. Mitch Marner is significantly better at walking the blue line than me, but it is risky.
That's not the word you used last night. And I don't know if you said it on air. I think you said it on air or you told me it off air.
Uh-oh.
But you used the D word.
That's
dangerous?
No.
Desperate?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, they're
Thank
obviously
you.
Desperate.
Did you say that on air or off air?
I don't remember.
I'll say
I don't
it on air.
Anything.
Okay. They're desperate, baby.
It was perfect.
Yeah.
And when you're in last place with $50 million out there, putting 5 forwards is... a desperate move. Are we all in agreement on that?
Great observation.
Okay.
That's like, like putting left-handed from 10 feet.
Yeah. Talking to my dad. Hi, Dad.
Good short-term move to kind of alleviate some of the pressure that's on you and Mark Savard. But there's no longevity with 5 forwards.
You don't think so? No one's done it with any prolonged
We success. Are at the beginning of November. Just picture OEL and Morgan Rielly sitting beside each other on the bench for a month without seeing any power play time other than maybe the last 15 seconds.
What's your worry, that they'd be grumpy about it?
It's just more separation. Like, there's no world that you cannot pick 1D to go out there on a power play. Mm-hmm. It's just, it doesn't work. For me, it doesn't work. And it kind of goes back to the team A, team B thing. It's okay for now.
Yeah.
But eventually, you're going to have to need those guys to come back.
It feels like the unplug and replug of an electronic device that's not working. Or like in basketball, you're playing 21 with someone where you throw it off the free throw line so they have to move their feet.
The old spinner?
Like, yeah, it just feels like, I don't know, let's just try get them off the line here and start over. So yeah, a little bit of desperation. Right? Yes, I do think though, like if you
Like OEL was brought in to help Morgan.
Morgan Riley and all
the power play two was the plan.
They make $10.5 million combined between those two and neither of them can get on the power play.
Yeah, but if one of those guys comes off, someone else who makes a lot of money comes off. I mean, it's...
No, but like you have the two defensemen that are supposed to be offensively inclined. Yeah, it's not a good look.
OEL was the guy who Klingberg was supposed to be the guy last year.
See, I don't remember sitting here with you before the season hearing that OEL was going to run PP1.
No, it wasn't about PP1. He was about a viable option to help.
It's an option, and right now he's not the best
to help
one.
Morgan. Now you're asking both of them to sit and watch a power play. I was okay with it. I liked it last night. I liked Marner back there. Mm-hmm. I like the way Marner can disguise and...
doesn't solve the shot from the top problem, but he does sift
it would
it
help
through.
If he had a bomb back there.
But he can sift it through, and he did that last night. He found a way to find a lane.
But probably a better decision maker up top there than either Oliver Ekman-Larsson.
I mean, he's
Morgan
one of the best
Riley.
Passers
I mean.
In the NHL. Yeah. Absolutely.
And he's making great decisions, and he's got a bit of defensive instincts. Didn't they play him at defense a year ago?
That was the thing. I forgot about
that. That happened, right?
God.
But, you know, you made the point, like, or was it Elliot, that he thinks sometimes the big shot's gone, and I'm like, I just watched the weekend. I watched Parayko with two huge shots from the point. Then I watched...
He meets Tampa and Bouchard and Edmonton.
Spurgeon last night. Yeah. He one times it off of Minnesota's first goal in front of the net. Yeah. And I'm like, the big shot lives, man.
Hedman's threat. It's the threat of it. It's the nuclear option. It's that if you're not in these lanes, because we move it around, just so you know, we can hit it from here. And it's nice to have that option.
There's also this guy that's closed in on a pretty big record in Washington that hammers it pretty hard, too.
He slaps the shot.
Still.
He hammers it pretty good. Still. So you need to have the threat, and they don't have it, so...
Next hour, we'll have Alan May talk about that a little bit more, Capitals analyst for Monumental Sports Network. And Frank Saravelli will join us at the top of the hour as well. So plenty more.
It does fall apart, though, the five-forward power play. I saw it in the Marlies that we tried it for a while, and it led to the biggest Dubas and Keefe fight I ever saw, where at one point Keefe said, why don't you fix it then, big mouth? Something like that. It was, you know, we'd given up like three shorties in two games at the five-man power play. If you stick with it for long enough, you'll have that game. Yeah. Where it's just a couple of shorties straight away.
They did get caught out on the ice for the whole 2 minutes.
They got lucky,
And Austin ended up being the last guy back.
It reminded me of Marchand in overtime with Austin back there, where I was like, he looks tired, and that's Kaprizov on him.
Yeah. Kaprizov didn't get the puck to challenge him one-on-one, but it wasn't that far off from it happening.
So, yeah, you don't want to stay with it for too long. No defensive instincts are natural for forwards.
It is funny, though. Like how they're bad their yips are on the power play, that the first unit had five forwards and then the second unit had two D-men. They're just like, we literally have no idea what we're doing.
And even I think Nylander's one-timer went in off the skate of the D.
He didn't hit it hard.
They needed a break there to get one.
Savvy's like, I don't know. I'm just throwing anything out there. They're literally dead last. It's crazy.
Five forwards. What about no forwards? I'm trying no forwards. They're desperate.
Let's go to Morgan Riley, get his thoughts on the game last night.
Interesting.
I thought it was a good hockey game. Obviously not high scoring, but that's okay. I think we want to get comfortable playing in those types of games. You know, coming in here on a back-to-back. I thought we were pretty good in the first. I thought we battled, and, you know, that's a good team. And so I thought it was a good game, and it's unfortunate we don't get the extra point, but we're moving in the right direction.
They did grind. They did.
They did.
It's a heavy game.
The Wild are second best team in the NHL defensively by pretty much every stat. Like, they don't give up much. They're a tough team. You like their decor a lot.
I think it's quietly one of the better ones in the league.
So let's take a look at the pairs.
after the, we're going to take a break here soon, but after the break, we'll talk more about, you know, Robertson and all that stuff. But I'm impressed with what Bill Guerin's done with that team.
They're sitting on a cap hit of
$15 million?
Yeah, 14 and a half that they can't use.
He's gonna take that nothing trade that we thought about, Kevin Fiala, Brock Faber.
Oh my god.
And he's gonna run it for the next 15 years. That Faber, I'm watching him last
25
night.
A night.
I'm watching him last night.
Buzzing.
He is for me like a Chris Chelios without the ugly mean streak.
Yeah, yeah.
Right-handed guy that can control the game defensively, seldom is out of position, and always finds a way to make the right play in a calm way.
Meanwhile, Fiel is a scratch because he's missing meetings.
And they gave up a first, too. It was a first and Faber for Fiala.
So Faber's playing with Middleton. Middleton's having a great year.
Yeah.
Spurgeon's playing with Jonas Brodin.
Brodin's
like Bogosian's on the
too.
Third pair.
Yeah. He's,
I don't know anything about Declan Chisholm, but
he's like Ekholm in Edmonton for me.
Brodin, yeah.
Brodin.
That's Swedish D. Frozen face off.
Yeah. I just frozen face off.
I don't know.
Not
frozen
what it's called.
Four nations. Four nations face off.
There's nothing.
Four facing
frozen.
Nations off.
There's no frozen in it. But you know, like that's a huge number. So like you're playing with an anvil on your back with $15 million, like that's three players. That's
it's impressive until you recognize they chose to wear the anvil.
We're all looking for the guy who did this. Yeah, but I'm impressed, man. And you know they wore those jerseys last night. They look so good.
Oh, sexy kit.
Yeah, Kaprizov looks really good. Although I thought the Leafs did a pretty good job on him last night. But anyways, just I'm impressed by them.
Okay, let's catch our breath, and when we come back, we'll get into more on the Leaf blue line. Terms of those block shots,
one guy's special.
I will tell you who it is after the break. You're watching and listening to The Real Kipper and Bourne Show.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL, the JD Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee. So overall, the blue line.
Mm-hmm.
We heard from Morgan Rielly just moments before we went to break. Nothing outstanding. No one got shot out of a cannon to start the season, but we believe that there's more depth, and it's better than what we've been accustomed to seeing the last few years.
For sure. No argument for me there.
I think McCabe's gotten better.
Yeah.
Him and Tanev playing together is a pairing you could actually picture in the playoffs, shutting somebody down. Like, I like that pairing.
Yep.
Bottom pairing leave me a little wanting, I would say.
But you know what that is for me is, like, Timmins has been, like, almost, like, found money.
Yeah, he's been good.
Benoit's not been the same player.
Did Timmins get last
night? Felt like he was out there a lot.
He was out there a awful lot.
I will get you that answer.
Right? And I think we discussed this before the weekend that Benoit... You said maybe lost a step. I said it just doesn't seem like to me that he's processing as quick. I thought he was a little better on the weekend.
18 minutes for Timmins.
Timmins, 18 minutes.
Really?
That's a big number.
That is. In a close game. And Benoit got 16 and a half.
I think if there's two guys that have taken advantage of an opportunity and really run with it, it's Knies and Timmins mm-hmm. would be 1-2 under a new coach, right?
Yeah. And on the other side of that, I know we want to stay in the decor, but McMahon and Kampf, we'll get to them later.
Okay, just and the overall effect Chris Tanev has had. We know what he's notoriously known for, and that's putting his face in front of every shot. Let's get Berube's thoughts on the decor, not just Tanev, but all of them on blocking shots.
D are doing a great job of blocking shots. Big part of the game is, you know, being hard in front of your net. We talked about it tonight. We talked about, you know, that team, they use their D a lot and they get a lot of pucks through. And so we're going to have to be hard at our net tonight. I thought we did a good job.
I know last night you had a couple examples where OEL likes to throw one up the middle.
Yeah, a couple of pizzas. He's
not afraid to toss one.
But it's just like
grenade launcher.
He's such a good skater. Sometimes, like, skate it. There's room ahead of you, and he tries to like fire one through traffic in the neutral zones. Don't do that. We don't need you to do that. He actually is leading the Leafs in ice time this year. Shocked anyone?
Really?
Yeah,
I am shocked.
Riley's like fourth. He's behind McCabe, Oyel, Tanev.
Yep. Some of that probably has to do with him not playing PP1.
Yeah.
Does that worry you at all in terms of wear and tear
for Oyel?
Tanev, Oyel, all of it.
Not really. Like none of them are playing like a crazy amount. I think he's got 22 minutes or something for Oyel. Like it's nothing. Two through the roof anyway.
So. The majority of the concern, I know we earlier in our show, we were talking about the lack of production out of Austin. He's got to get going. But that probably puts a lot more stress on him when others underneath him can't find the net either.
Yeah, I just wanted to add, Hakanpaa is going to come back.
Yeah.
Do you think he'll take out Benoit?
I don't know if that blue line has Hakanpaa and Benoit in the same game.
Yeah. The same idea.
I don't know how you take Timmins out with his right-handed shot in his 18 minutes.
Yeah.
So tell me what's left then.
But Hakanpaa's a righty too, so they're going to have two righties on the bottom pair?
No. It'll be poor Timmins.
You think Timmins is coming out?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they're going to want to see if Hakanpaa can be of help. With Liljegren gone, like they kind of need Hakanpaa to be okay. Anyway, wait and see on that?
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, your guess is as good as mine right now.
Yeah.
I will say I do love how much the Florida Panthers rubbed off on Oliver Ekman-Larsson.
Really surprising. Greasy. And, like, actually hits guys.
I don't ever remember him like that in Arizona.
No.
He just seems annoyed. Like
He didn't have any edge at all in Vancouver.
I don't remember it like this.
I don't remember it either.
I'd love to hear it from people, but I've watched him long enough and I can't remember being like, ooh, he's got a little, but he's a looking
sneaky,
for guys.
Dirty,
yeah.
Eh?
Well, he.
Which is great.
Hootie Pie, was it Rossi that he did like the, I've been watching the Vince McMahon doc. He went full Stone Cold Steve Austin on that guy, just like hammering him on the ice. Like he was punching him and then he was sitting on the bench fooling with his thing. And then Reeves goes over. Like, I love that stuff. So yeah, I mean, he maybe didn't need to take an extra two, but he's been sneaky greasy and it's good.
Yeah, that's
good
a positive. You were starting to talk about depth scoring.
Yes.
Mm. Part of the reason that Austin is playing so much in the D zone is just they don't like Kampf. Berube doesn't like Kampf. And he's playing, what, 12 and a half, 13 minutes a night? So now Austin's in his own end more. So that's one thing. And then Bobby McMahon feels like a very fringe guy here. Can't get any opportunity up the lineup. And that line with him and Domi. Domi has no points in seven straight games. McMahon.
Yeah, it's gone.
Real cold.
Awfully cold.
And McMahon's the same. I don't think he has a point in a long time.
We saw Nick Robertson scratched Saturday night, only to come back in the lineup against Minnesota. I know we had our preseason conversations on over-under for Nick. You were very optimistic.
I got him over 20 goals on the year. That's what I said. I don't.
Is there a chance that
if he gets traded soon, it could happen?
is there any room at all that he finds a way to contribute like he did last season with his 15, 14?
I'm going to say last night was the worst I've seen him play in, I don't know, maybe ever.
You know why?
Why?
Because he's not playing the game that he thinks he should, like he's playing.
You're right. He's trying to like hit guys, like running, rub them out.
He's like trying to play that he's 6'2" and he's, you know, Berube is telling me a way to play. And he's totally caught between what he's trying to do out there. He has no
idea. That's the best analysis you've ever done.
It's true. Yes. Oh, thank you. I mean, I'm not sure what that says about my other analysis, but he's just.
No, but it's good analysis.
He's stuck. He doesn't know what he's supposed to do on the ice. He's running into guys like. You see him
angling guys into the boards and he can't physically get them into the boards.
I don't know if you guys are watching the game closely. There was a fourth line shift where they must have cycled the puck for a minute and a half.
We clipped it last night.
And Nick Robertson comes over the boards, has the puck for a millisecond. The guy
bounces off
him and the puck goes out.
Yeah.
Literally just separated him with the puck from the gentle shoulder and was like, okay.
It was a minute and a half they had it in the offensive zone. And then the second he touches, it's gone.
Yeah, it was really, really bad. So we had a clip to show last night, but we were trying to keep it a little more positive.
Oh, my God. You guys are so nice. Different guys on the panel, right? You're nice guys on the panel.
We had 2 hours to let the real personality pour out.
Yeah. And on this show, we speak like no one's listening or no one cares.
This is locker room style.
Maybe, maybe they don't care.
TV's a different beast.
Maybe they don't care.
But really it comes back to those conversations we had before, is that if he doesn't get an opportunity to be a top six guy or start a power play, which he did during the exhibition series and found a way to get on this.
And he's playing with a player or two, usually the top line guy.
But there was just never any room for him, and he's really fallen back right to the same spot he was with Sheldon Keefe.
Yeah. And he's played 11:40 last night, you know, had his shot or whatever. But the reason I said he played bad last night was a purely physical evaluation of his game, not like his puck touches were bad or he didn't, like, he just couldn't get guys off the puck. He got separated from the puck when he had it. All the things where you go size matters were visible last night, and they're just, that's not changing. He's not going to become, so I'm with you, Sam. He should almost just, I'm an offensive player. I'm going to cheat. I'm going to do all the things and try to get goals for you, because I'm not going to help you if you're asking me to be a well-rounded guy.
Or try to sneak him up into the top six for a shift here or there. Maybe you can see one go in. Like, it's just what you're trying to make him into. Stop trying to make Fetch happen.
No.
It's not going to happen.
No, he is not.
It's just not his game. Yeah. And playing him with with Domi and McMahon or Holmberg, and it's not a good mix.
Well, it's not a good mix because none of them are going right now. McMahon, Domi, Holmberg, who was a healthy scratch as well on the weekend, and Robertson. There's four depth role players for the Toronto Maple Leafs that can't find the back of the net.
And it says something that Holmberg's a scratch because he loves Holmberg and wants it to work. He wants a true center, a strong guy who's committed defensively. He likes the idea of Holmberg, but he just has been so ineffective, and I think a couple shows ago, we had a clip from him where he said that Holmberg just looks a step behind right now. Yeah. And that didn't change, and I think that's why he was out of the lineup.
The bottom six in the game last night, they have six goals combined on the season. Right? Three from McMahon, one from Robertson, and two from Lorenz. And the one from Robertson was in a 6-1 game.
Yeah.
When they were losing 6-1.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you're not, unless you're, I mean, we're getting back to the core of the issue for 8 years here. Mm-hmm. But it's just, it's not good enough from the bottom half of the lineup. So,
no.
Like, you go to the Marlies, you use an example out of one of them for a longer stretch than one healthy game scratch.
You know, send someone down, is that you're saying?
What's
Alex Nylander up to?
Do you trade? What's going on? Do you trade? do you look for a trade right now going into American Thanksgiving?
I think that a lot of the underlying numbers for the Toronto Maple Leafs are that they're doing pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think this team's in crisis by any means, so I don't think that's necessary.
They are desperate for a center.
But you have just mentioned moments ago that this has been an ongoing issue here with this hockey club.
Yeah.
Is secondary scoring. It's not like just we're talking the
Nyes
last
is the
2 weeks.
First guy where you're like, okay, there's one other guy. You know, there's a fifth guy who could conceivably score.
Like, do you put him somewhere else?
I actually don't think that's a bad idea at all.
Like, he has looked like he could drive a line. Do you put Domi up on the top with those guys and let Nyes go down and try to drive guys a bit, but then you're losing what you're getting? Maybe you're just shuffling deck chairs on a certain ship. I don't know, but it's just, it's not pretty right now. I know we don't talk about 3-on-3 a lot because it's not real hockey, but can you explain the Domi thought process in overtime?
Sure. So I'm going to sneeze, so someone else talk for a minute.
Uh-oh. On-air sneeze.
Kip will kill me if I sneeze.
What? Damn it.
I tried so hard.
Now I'm the only one that has not sneezed this season.
Okay. Let's talk about Domi. First off, the Pacioretty play last night, we gave way too much credit to. You know, Elliot was like, yeah, I can see what he's thinking. He's going to the wall. He's the last guy on up the ice. Someone's changing. He's cheating, looking for a turnover.
Yes.
It's a terrible play by Pacioretty last night, who's not fast already and probably shouldn't be out on 3-on-3.
When he went over.
Matthew Nyes hasn't been out yet.
I was watching the game by myself, and I saw him cover the boards. I was like, Pacioretty?
Yeah.
I said that out loud to myself, to no one. I was like, really? Yeah.
And sure enough, that burned him.
Yeah.
But Max just thought he was going to skate into a 40-foot push.
He didn't recognize, that someone was a step behind him with a little more energy and momentum. And so the first touch was a little aggressive for the punted up the ice.
Yeah. And then the natural feel is that he's either going to skate the puck back and then regroup, or throw it up the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's got a
pretty smart little bugger.
Yeah.
Puts it right back up the middle of the ice to a wide open.
Boldy.
Two of them. It was a 2-on-0.
Yeah, beautiful finish.
Yeah. Oh, that finish was so nasty.
So nice.
Stolarz wasn't within, 10 feet of stopping that.
Threw it off the bar and in.
Couple other thoughts. First off, in their last 20 overtimes, they've won 8 times. So yeah. they're 8-12 in their last 20. So
3-3 sucks.
Okay.
And like, Willie must have all
like
those.
This is not sour grapes because, you know, your favorite team didn't win, but I'm sick of it.
Sucks.
I'm sick of it. I'm sick of watching one face-off turn into figure eights for a minute.
It's bad.
It's
skate for the love of God.
It's just
challenge the D.
So when did this flip? Because when it first started, it was electric.
Yeah.
It was breakaways, 2-on-1s.
You know what the grossest part of 3-on-3 is? Is watching you gain a zone and then a guy go,
I don't like to take it back out to the neutral zone again.
Ugh. And then just,
I think I'm in favor of the floating blue line.
3 or 4 times to watch a puck enter a zone and then purposely bring it out because you just feel like regrouping again and killing another 30 seconds off the clock. Like, please do something about this. Like,
what's the floating blue line, Borny?
It's like once you cross the blue,
it disappears.
The blue line would become the red line at that point. So the offensive zone is all the red line, and if you take it out past the red,
it won't solve anything because they'll just treat it the same way. It's the delay of waiting and waiting and waiting.
Yeah.
It's so not hockey. If the NHL wants it that badly, create a 3-on-3 league.
Wasn't that going to happen? Wasn't that a rumor for a minute?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think it was either. yeah, it's bad though, Kip. And it's frustrating to watch. And often I think these guys are excited that we've all decided we're just going to get to have it for a bit and play around. It's like, for the love of God, challenge.
Skate fast.
Yeah.
Or just go to 4-on-4.
The other thing for the Leafs, I got a message from a friend here, just that they do have depth scoring potential help. Does Yaron Crocker Doer interest you? Are they any better with either of those guys?
Yeah, their 10 goals combined will help.
I actually thought the exact same thing where I was like, Yaron Crocker got 20. He's probably good for 14 this year. Prorated for his injury.
I don't think close.
No, eh?
No.
You don't hear much.
No. I'm not sure if he's...
Doer scored for the Marlies.
I don't think he's skating regularly yet. I could be wrong. We'll maybe send a note to Luke. But you tell me, is all of a sudden that guy's going to pop in the next week?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
It doesn't seem imminent, no. Doer probably more so. At which point you have a natural centerman, and just give him a look. See if he can give you something that Holmberg wasn't.
Then Kampf comes out of the lineup.
Holmberg stays out of the lineup.
Does Holmberg have an option? Can he go back down?
I don't know. Picking him up? Yeah, someone is.
He may have to clear waivers, I think.
Mm.
They might have to trade a human.
Yeah. We're heading towards that.
Yeah.
Heading towards that.
Just right now, everybody's still going through the feel-out process coming out of training camp.
Mm-hmm.
But we are getting at that point where, you know, some teams, like the Winnipeg Jets, have established themselves so well to start the season that
they're 500 from here out. They're fine.
They're fine.
Oh my God, they're so good.
500.
Wait,
11-1?
11-1?
Yeah.
Minnesota.
Oh my God.
Minnesota too. If they play 500,
playoffs.
Know, they get in.
Yeah.
And you look at the
Leafs on an 88-point pace, I think.
You look at the East right now, right? And it's like Ottawa's pushing. Right, but they're a mid team right now, but they're really in the thick of things with the Leafs and a bunch of other teams. But
we know who's in.
We got Alan May coming up in the next hour. But where's Washington now? All of a sudden, to throw a curveball into the East, and what does it look like? Is it 4-4 out of the East? Is it 5-3? Is it 5 in the Atlantic? Is it 5 in the Metro?
4-4. Florida, Tampa Bay, Toronto, Ottawa. And then New York, Carolina, Washington, New Jersey. There's your playoff team. Who else is getting in?
Let's fast forward to April, baby.
Boston
or
Detroit.
For you.
I'm not saying it. I'll say they're in because that means they'll be out.
Hold on. We got another hour.
Yeah.
We're going national coming up next. Frank Saravelli, Hockey Insider, president of Hockey Content with the Daily Faceoff. We'll get his thoughts on, could we see a Leaf trade?
Hope so.
He'll tell us.
This show would love it.
Okay, don't go away, everybody. We're just getting things started here on The Real Kipper and Bourne Show. Back after these words.